Good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Ramprasad De Silva, Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to today's session entitled Post-COVID-19 Imperatives for Effective Governance, Fulfilling Your Fiduciary Duties in a Socially Distanced World. Today's session is a continuation of our discussion on leadership, which we began last week with Sophia Johnson-Noel, as she tackled dealing with difficult votes. Today, we are very privileged to have as our presenter a very experienced board director, Mr. Richard P. Young, former managing director of Scotiabank and now an independent director with the Massey Group. Mr. Young will focus on the COVID-19 environment and how it has brought changes to the practices in the boardroom. In particular, a key point which will be underscored by Mr. Young today is that accountability remains with the board. So it is very important that directors are aware of their responsibilities and the threats to successful fulfillment of their fiduciary duties. Many of you present today have attended several of our online sessions over the last 2 months since the COVID-19 restrictions propelled many of us to adopt a Zoom meeting room to be able to connect and ensure business continuity. However, there are a few of you who are joining us for the first time. In welcoming you, I want to share that the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute is a nonprofit membership organization, and we welcome everyone who wishes to join our purpose of improving corporate governance practices in the region. I wish to also share that the Institute will be hosting its inaugural Governance Week, which was initially scheduled to be held at the Hyatt Regency. However, demonstrating the flexibility of many firms, we have moved to a virtual environment and will be offering an international experience for you from Monday, June 29th to Friday, July 3rd, 2020. We will also be offering our modules in the Certificate in Corporate Governance program, which will begin during Governance Week. Final details of this inaugural event should be ready by next week, so look out for more information coming soon. I would also like to make a few housekeeping announcements before we go to the presentation and discussion with Mr. Richard Young. We would like everyone to remain on mute during his presentation, which would last about 20 minutes. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions when Mr. Young is finished. There's an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hands when you wish to get our attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done to minimize disruptive noises. You may also make comments or ask questions in the chat feature during the session, which may be read out afterwards. Mr. Young wants this to be more of a discussion session whereby you are able to share your concerns or ideas. So there would be lots of opportunity to contribute to the conversation. As always, we are very grateful for our technical support, which is provided by Christy Johnseller Crouch from SmartServe Limited. If you would like to get online support for Zoom meetings, you can contact Christy. Please note too that this meeting is being recorded, and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure that the recording is available on the CCGI website and available to all our members. Finally, I would like to ask our chairman, Mr. Nigel Romano, to make a few opening remarks and then pass on to Richard for his presentation. Nigel.
Thank you, Kamala. And I want to thank Richard for agreeing to join us and for leading this discussion. Governance is critical, and good governance is a rare commodity, unfortunately. And in this, the COVID-19 pandemic has done is pushed us, unprepared most of us, into a digital world. And I look forward to the conversation, of course, led by Richard, as to how do we deliver on our promises? How do we deliver on the value that we are promising for our members, our shareholders, our team members? So I will shut up right now and listen very attentively to Richard's words of wisdom. Again, Richard, thank you very much. Over to
you. Not at all. Thank you very much, Nigel, and good morning again to everyone. It's great to be back in the days of talking and speaking and so on. I haven't done this for quite some time. Christy, if you want to put up the slide to me, I'd appreciate. Yeah? Hi. But, you know, there is no doubt that COVID has really caused us to definitely do our things differently. And I guess today, I just want to share some thoughts and reinforce some of the things where we do have to. So if you could go to the next slide, Christy. There is no doubt that we are in unprecedented times. Nobody could doubt that. Christy, you want to push the slide? And you know, I'm not controlling the slide, so let me continue. I mean, I don't think anybody will debate it that there are serious challenges ahead. I mean, both in the area of lives of people, human, and again, of course, the economy. So it's going to be a really, really, really tough kind of environment. Everything indicates that we are going to have significant economic decline. There's no doubt about that. And of course, going with that, or kind of running in parallel with that, is the whole question of massive unemployment. I mean, we're going to have some sectors that will fail. And then we have countries all fighting it in all different ways. I mean, regionally, we are in a situation where we have very little tourism for our brothers and sisters who depend on tourism. And of course, at home, we have serious challenges with the energy prices. And of course, the consumption part, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no doubt about that. But of course, to me, the biggest issue really would be health and safety. I mean, that is crucial. Because we're really dealing with a pandemic. It's a catastrophe from an insurance point of view, although I'm not too sure how much of it will be covered by insurance. So what does this call for? It definitely calls for, in a similar manner, unprecedented action. We have to deal with this dilemma, and we have to face it. We definitely have to conquer it, and that requires a significant change in mindset. And it also calls on us to be innovative. Now that's easier said than done. And of course, all businesses are now forced to arrive and utilize or design all sorts of different strategies. I believe it will center around 3 or 4 areas in the sense of restructuring the business and re-engineering it. And that's where, you know, Nigel comments come in terms of using technology, but also a sort of a renewal, because I think one should take this opportunity as board members to also reflect and renew yourselves as to whether you want to pursue the business, whether the business makes sense. I think it's a good opportunity. I mean, I'm not suggesting defeat, but it is an ideal opportunity because in doing those things, you know, all sorts of things will unfold. So I am also suggesting that the board must make this a priority over and above the business to kind of take action and decide how the business will move forward. Next slide, Christy. And then, you know, to use the cliche of, as we say, business as unusual. You know, we always to say it before, in the context of prior to COVID, you know, everybody would say when they're trying to do something, they would say, well, it's no longer business as usual. It's business as unusual. So this time is for real. It really means that there is a call to action and that recognizing that things will be different. So I'm suggesting that COVID has really made this business as unusual a reality. And in fact, it is really now a realism. It's fact. So I was going on to the next slide, Christy. I should really, I'm having a little difficulty loading it up myself. So can we go to the next slide? So, you know, in the context of as directors, the big question, you know, have our duties been changed or fiduciary responsibilities? And I would suggest no. And I think it's a kind of a no-brainer. I mean, we have to really, you know, accept that this is par for the course. That's what we're there for. As I say, that's why we get paid those small bucks to the directors, that we have that responsibility. And it really means that we have to be more conscious of those responsibilities. I think that being more conscious will cause you to get into action. It also, as I said, gives you an opportunity as a board, as a director, to kind of step back and really look at the business in whole, reassess the risk. And then, of course, your responsibility is to make sure that the business survives. And also, of course, taking the stakeholders' consideration and perception and the whole input and the perspective. Next slide, Christy. So what that then therefore calls for, and Kamla mentioned it in the context of leadership, I think it requires all board members to be a little more astute, to be more conscious of things, to obviously understand what's happening, anticipate, and of course, do a lot more research. But at the same time, I think it also requires strong leadership. But going with that strength, I think we have to be a little empathetic, because really, we are in really, really a topsy-turvy world at this stage. So as a director, you really have to be more aware of what's going on in the economy, your particular sector. I mean, if you're in the hospitality industry, I worry. I mean, the airline industry. I mean, look at home locally. I think Minister of Finance had to go and raise about, I thought it was about 650 million US, Nigel, for Cal. I mean, and then the hotels, I mean, the cruise lines. And then the countries, of course. So you know, you have sectors that are just, could just dissipate. And you have to ensure that if you find yourself on a board in that particular sector, then you have to be, you know, very conscious. I mean, even I would suggest, you know, in the financial services sector, where now you're going to be faced perhaps with increased delinquency in spite of some of the government intervention, I mean, you're going to have to be more astute. And then, of course, the accountants will come in with their accounting standards, what they call the IFRS 9, which causes you to have to put aside more for loan losses. So you have to really get into your sector, understand how COVID has impacted it. And as I mentioned, you've got to also factor in the perspective of all your stakeholders. You know, you could start with your membership, your shareholders. We've seen one or two public companies, or one particular public company, take a decision to, although they had proposed a final dividend, it hadn't been paid at the time, they withdrew it, much to the chagrin of the family that own about, I think about 75% of the business. Then we saw in Jamaica, where the Bank of Jamaica, the central bank, had in fact initially set the financial, the regulators, the companies that regulate, not to pay any dividend, and they're now coming back with a modified model. So I think, you know, if you're in a private company, I think it's important for you to get a sense or communicate with your shareholders as to their expectations. They may say to you, I want to have the same dividend, which you may find unreasonable. So that's where you really have to take their perspective. After all, they put their money in it. And, you know, for public companies, it's always an ironical thing that here we have people who are, you know, you said to people, invest in the stock exchange, go public. So, you know, Tanti and Granny and Uncle put in their little $2,000 or $3,000 worth of shares. And the dividends are small, but they look forward to it. And now we're finding ourselves, you know, without dividends. So your shareholders is a critical part. Those of us who, of course, work for, if you work for the state and you're running a profitable state enterprise, you're going to expect your shareholders to, more than, you know, one more than the regular dividend. And then, you know, even your customers, they're going to expect some tolerance. And again, depends on your sector. You will have to decide. So you really have to know what's going on. I mean, you know, the banks have been kind of, you know, forced or suggested that they give some moratorium. But even in the normal trading companies, you know, your customers may be going through and the chance of you being paid could be very slim. Or you may have a customer who has done very well with COVID. So, you know, again, all I'm saying is that you really need to understand your business, your sector. And then, of course, your suppliers. That is always a difficult one, whether it is, you know, import or local. And that whole chain of the supply chain. And then, of course, last but not least, your people, your staff. I mean, they're going to have some serious concerns, some, you know, perspectives that they are, you know, they're worried about the safety and things like that. So the bottom line really is that you cannot take anything for granted, you know, and that's where the astuteness, the leadership, you know, calls for. Some of you in a bigger company may choose to perhaps just for the time of COVID form a special committee. You know, we're going to call it a post-COVID committee or COVID committee, you know, and they will kind of monitor it and deal with the various issues that come up instead of the entire board, because they may also have to get involved a little more on the day-to-day just to ensure that the board is happy with the monitoring. So, you know, that's just a thought. And then, of course, there's also the argument, because I find that when you sit on an audit committee, you always get risk attached to you, because most of it are now called audit and risk. So they might see this as a risk. So it might be the task of the audit committee. But, you know, just to give it a thought as to whether you need a subcommittee of the board to focus on the impact of COVID on the business. I think that's really, really important. But what is really critical, of course, as I said earlier, is that you have to adopt, in my mind, a different perspective, a different mindset. That's why we said it's going to be business as unusual. And I think part of your fiduciary responsibility as a director is that you are going to have to think differently. It cannot be the same. History is a great thing. Some of you are getting mature like me, you know, history kind of becomes more important. But the truth is, you know, in this kind of post-COVID situation, yes, history is good, but you really have to think differently. You know, understand, as I said, the question of the staff. They are going to be concerned about their jobs, particularly if you are in a sector where the, you know, the prospects are, you know, a little doubtful, and then you're going to have to manage that whole fallout. And then, of course, you know, they're all concerned about the safety side, so that even getting back to work, there could be a, you know, a sensitive area to play with in the context of getting the place ready, making it, you know, safe and stuff like that. And of course, you know, I sit on a public company, and one of the divisions that continue to do well in the COVID scenario, but we spent a lot of money kind of, and you know, countering COVID in terms of, you know, the cleaning and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of money spent on that. And of course, in all businesses going forward, you're going to be obviously have to look at that aspect, whether it's the constant supply of, you know, call it hand sanitizers, you know, the thermometers, etc. So this is where I say, you know, it requires this astuteness, you know, both to understand your sector, to understand how COVID is impacting it, and then, of course, to really become strong leaders and at the same time be empathetic. So if I can go to the next slide, Christy. So to use your Latin term, we got to seize the day. So this is where you also have a role to play as a board member, where you must also, as I said just now, reflect, renew, restructure, re-engineer. You got to seize this opportunity now to see how you can, in fact, make the business better, how you could get it done so that it can sustain itself. And as I said, you know, in the renewal process, you may decide you're going to do something else. So again, as a board member, as part of your responsibility, you've got to do that. And this is where the opportunity should be taken. I mean, I can't speak for the country, of course, but, you know, one of the things that certainly we at the TTIFC, so doing a little plug here, has recommended to the Recovery Committee is that, as Nigel hinted on, the use of technology. But we are trying to push financial technology, fintech, so that, you know, technology is one way to move the country forward. And if we had, in fact, the whole kind of e-wallet cashless system, we wouldn't have had all those people lining up and having to open bank accounts to get their social services check and stuff like that. But you have to now look and use this opportunity when you are re-engineering or restructuring how much of technology you could use to really accommodate the new form of business. And of course, in a broad sense and using some finance terms, you know, capitalize on the change. COVID is going to bring about change. You need to really, as a board member, understand that your responsibility is part of that. And we'll talk a little bit of how you balance that with management in a little while. But you have to be the driver. You have to exert that leadership, you know, to ensure that the business go through that process. You cannot take it for granted. As I said, it's business as an unusual. And then, of course, in the process, it gives you a goal and opportunity to kind of, maybe prior to COVID, your business may have been in a little bit of a shaky area, and now it could be an opportunity to really make it more sustainable, so that seize the day, seize the opportunity. And I mean, this stuff is really because of the world of technology today. There are lots of stuff on YouTube. I haven't gone on YouTube, but I'm sure there is on Google, you know, how to tackle it. You know, and I found that in my little bit of research and reading, I found McKinsey quite pragmatic and practical, and also the Boston Consulting Group. I think they've kind of rebranded themselves to BCG instead of Boston Consulting Group. But there are many publications. I mean, I haven't gone to, like, say, the directors, whether you have a UK link to the director, the Institute of Directors, whether they have stuff. But the message really is that you really, really have to, this time, really work hard if you were taking on your responsibility as a board member. In whatever form, whether it's a public, a private, a state. State may be a little more difficult because, you know, you have to get the mandates to change. But there is no doubt that we have to. And take the opportunity to become more efficient. And then that leads me to the next slide, which is really about getting this thing done is easier said than done. We could, you know, we could conceptualize and think about all the different things, but as we all know, change is a crucial thing. It really is. It's going to call for some serious change management. And again, that's where strong leadership comes in. But I also believe that to achieve change at times, you've got to have open communication and, you know, with all your stakeholders. Because they are going to obviously have their perspective. As I said, the shareholder may be expecting the same dividend. And then your employee is going to think that, well, the job is safe, you know, and stuff like that. It's going to be a really, really, to me, this is the biggest task. Managing that change management and understanding how it's going to impact the business. As I say, this is going to be the hardest hard, and it's going to bring about a lot of stress. I mean, you could only hope that perhaps the vaccine gets developed and there will be less concern, certainly from the safety side. The truth is, I mean, personally, my biggest concern here and fear is, would the country take this opportunity and reset? Would all people take this opportunity and realize it has to be different? Would all people realize that it's going to require sacrifice? I mean, already we've seen that they're not taking on the wearing of the mask and, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, those of us who have been around a little bit will remember when the price of oil was $10 a barrel. Andrew, you were still a little girl then, so you wouldn't know that. But it caused the country to change. And our manufacturers really began to, you know, take up the gauntlet And that's how we became such a strong manufacturing base. So sometimes, as I say, you know, a crisis brings opportunity. But the critical thing really is the managing the change and then having everybody on the same song sheet. That has to be clear and it has to be understood. So that to me is a difficult one, the challenge. If you could go to the next slide, Christine. So, you know, all this, and last week's session talked about, it was more to management as against the board and the need for the board not to micromanage. It needs to, you know, have proper unison to ensure that the management or the executives are aligned with the board, the collaboration. It depends on the business, you know, how bad it is in a sense, or how good it is, or how comfortable, because there's some businesses who are prospering as a result of COVID, because of the nature of their business. And, you know, you will have to decide as a board member or through your chairman as a board, whether, as I said, whether you want to have that earlier that COVID committee, or whether you really have to do a little bit of micromanaging. It's not the ideal, but the thing is that you may have to, you know, you kind of have that responsibility. And if you're saying that there's going to be business as an unusual, you just can't just relax. And again, it depends on the quality of your management, your leadership team. If you know, so it's going to be a judgment call. You will have to decide what's the best way of doing it. But what I could say, though, I feel because of the uncertainty, because of the different time, you may find yourself as a board member perhaps asking for more frequent meetings. You may have to get a little more connected in initial stages on day-to-day stuff. Because remember, management also is going to be new to them. So this is a golden opportunity. We are working as a team, but at the same time, not necessarily, you know, micromanaging is not the ideal, because it kind of prevents the development of the executives also. But, you know, you just can't ignore it. And you really have to really make a judgment call as to, right, I can relax here and that area. But it's an opportunity to ensure that there's full alignment. And then, of course, you must have really deep conversations, whether they're positive or negative. I mean, that's where the empathetic and strong leadership is going to be called for. But you're going to have to have that fulsome, that wholesome conversation, balanced, of course. And again, you know, even in terms of you know, as a contra to micromanaging, if you think you have sufficient of a system that could generate more additional reports, not to just for generating reports, but if you could agree some metrics as to what you should try to achieve in dealing with COVID, those are some of the things that, you know, you could get management to really work with you on. And then, of course, present those things to the board. And I keep saying again that in this aspect of looking after the business, you're going to have to ensure that the board is kept up to date consistently, knowing how management is sort of addressing it. And of course, you're going to find that a fair amount of your contribution would be COVID-related, but don't forget the rest of the business. So, you know, so that's a kind of part of the change management process, but it really gives an opportunity to create better collaboration between the board and management. And then my final slide is really about something we talked about last week. I mean, should there be a different protocol for board meeting? I mean, I don't know how long. I suspect that the virtual approach is going to probably become a way of life, certainly in our environment where you could save a lot of time. It will help. So I suggested that maybe this is an opportunity for the Governance Institute to come up with some guidelines. I mean, simple things, you know, I mean, in terms of you know, using the technology. And last week we were, Nigel was making the point about, you know, when you're interacting with board members, not seeing them makes it more difficult because you're not getting the body language. And a simple protocol may be that when you're having board virtual board meetings, that everybody must be on video. I mean, you know, if you have a big board, it's a little more difficult. But certainly when it comes, perhaps when a board member has to make a comment, you know, they shouldn't really, I would advocate that they shouldn't really just hide behind audio, and they should be video, they should be, the video should come on so that everybody can see the body language, how you're delivering, because, you know, and then it's a protocol. I mean, I was guilty the other day when I was at a board meeting, I was chatting on WhatsApp with another director. We were having our own conversation. It was terrible. But, you know, it's so tempting if you're not on the screen. And I'm sure many of us who have been in the sort of video, the teleconferencing days, we used to do a lot of that, you know, continue to do your work. So you know, there's those kind of protocols. There is also, I mean, a very pragmatic thing that I think we assume that everybody is comfortable, all your fellow board members are comfortable with virtual board meetings, you know, and that may not be so. It could be very difficult for them. Just like I couldn't load up the slide this morning to control it. And then there's the whole question of, you know, how technology savvy they are. So, you know, it's there are some pragmatic protocols. And then whether it is that you want to put as a standard item on your agenda post-COVID so that it is there, there's focus. So there's several protocols. I mean, and you know, also, whilst we may avoid the traffic, there is also getting ready before the meeting rather than everybody scrambling at the appointed time and then we don't really get the meeting going until 15 minutes later. So it's this is new to us. I mean, we may have had it very formal, but if we were to have protocol for board meetings, I would suggest this is an opportunity. I could share with you that at the TTIFC, because we only have really the corporation sole as our shareholder, I got our Minister of Finance to agree that we will change our bylaws to allow virtual annual general meetings and special meetings. I think generally under the current Companies Audit Act, I think teleconference is stated, I'm not too sure video conference is stated in the bylaws, but it has been taken for granted that you could have board meetings virtually. But I would suggest that, you know, check your bylaws just to make sure you're covered on it. But this is the time I am proposing that we're going to change the bylaws to have it. You've seen some public companies having a go at it. I see UTC is coming up later. As well as the next one, I think, would be in mid-June, I think, for Citizens, and then SAGICO. And I'm not too sure whether, I'm not a lawyer, and those of you who are, maybe Indra, you could tell me, because I see some of them calling for a first resolution whilst attending virtually to accept a virtual meeting. And I don't want to be a bush lawyer, but all I'm saying here is that you may want to make sure that your bylaws cover this new world of technology in terms of virtual meetings. Okay, so I think I hope I've kind of given you some things to think about. But I close by saying we are certainly in a real confused world. So it is going to require strong action, nothing taken for granted. Take the opportunity to re-engineer yourself to be more efficient. If you could use technology, so much the better. But at the end of the day, understand that your fiduciary responsibility as a board member hasn't changed. In fact, I would suggest it has become more critical that you play an active role. And each board member, regardless of the discipline, must understand the impact of COVID and the business itself. Because, you know, the economics of the rest of the world and even our country is not looking very bright as such from that point of view. So I will close with that. I hope that you know, you some of you may disagree, and I would love that. We could have a chat. I don't want everybody to agree. So back to you, Chairman. I let me just check to see if there's any chats came up.
There were some comments, and I'll talk to them. But I want to thank you for a very, very thoughtful, very provoking presentation, because we are in the belly of the beast, as it were, change on steroids. And quite frankly, I don't think any of us or any one of us have all the answers. And for me, it's about collaborating and working and not necessarily waiting for perfection, but to be in the mode of experimentation and action. And I think you mentioned that about action, mindset change, innovation. Suraj made the point that the leader should know the way, go the way, show the way. And he also suggested that there may be need for micromanagement as we go through this very difficult time. I would like to, I understand the need for the board maybe to get involved in the conversation and a lot more intimately. But I am always wary of micromanaging. For me, it's about supporting and being more involved than we would normally be, because we are in, as I said, change on steroids, and in that environment where there could be a lot of instability, a lot of uncertainty, the conversations may need to be more frequent than is the norm. But the last thing I want to do is to impose myself in the day-to-day as opposed to providing guidance. So I would love to hear from you and from Suraj and the others about how we should think about that.
Yeah. Well, let's hear from Suraj now. I you know.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Good morning. And again, compliments to Kamla and the team, you know, Mr. Romano, you all for another excellent platform. When I think about micromanagement from the board level, I think not for management, not for the board to get involved in the day-to-day operations, but to be more conversant with what is happening. So mm-hmm. have monthly meetings. In this case, you may need to have more regular meetings than a monthly mm-hmm. meeting. Mm-hmm. You may need to have greater interaction with your top level management in terms of how implementation is taking place. What are the mm-hmm. challenges that they are being faced with, as against waiting for a longer period for reporting as maybe customary. Mm-hmm. Micromanagement, however, for management employees, I think, when the senior management has to now get down a little bit more into the details of how employees are switching to the new changes, I think would be necessary, if only because of the uncertainty that the world is faced with. And a lot of people are apprehensive and fearful as a result of those uncertainties. So I think that if management is driving the way and they are supposed to be driving the way, that's where that leadership of knowing the way, going the way, and showing the way is so important. Mm-hmm. That a level of confidence can be developed within the employees' minds so that they can eventually be allowed to roam and to do things, you know, as time progresses. But initially, that holding the hand would be, I think, a little bit critical in order mm-hmm. to give people the confidence that, you know, this is just another challenge. It's nothing that is out of the world. And we would surmount it as well. That's my take.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Suraj. So I had one question, and you could answer, or anybody else could come into the conversation. Knowing the way, very interesting, because right now, most of us don't even know what the way means. which direction to go in, what challenges, how do we respond, what is coming down the track. Very interestingly, earlier this week or late last week, I was looking at the impact of the crisis and the fall-off in the price of oil on the shale sector, which is the sector that has been giving the traditional producers a lot of trouble. And they are in trouble. And it's one of the reasons for the increasing, as we saw, the rebound in the price of oil. So again, this is a crazy time. And I'm not sure any of us individually know the way. How would you respond to that?
May I make a contribution?
Of course.
All right. Yes. I see a lot of persons commenting on this whole issue of the micromanagement, mm-hmm. you know, and the role of the board in that respect. And I think one of the things that came through really nicely in Richard's presentation was that there is no one definite way, that each board really needs to understand its sector and then understand the company's challenges that's specific to it, given the kind of impact with COVID-19. I want to go a little further and suggest that really the level of involvement of the board is going to depend to a great extent on your quality of management. Boards must know what's going on if they are going to advise and if they're going to retain that accountability which resides with the board. And therefore, if the board is confident that the management team has the best grip that they can have on the uncertain situation, and they can rely on management communicating effectively what their options are, what they're thinking is the way forward, a board in that situation may very easily be content with allowing management to run the show mm-hmm. and simply be informed. However, mm-hmm. if your management team is also finding it challenging to be able to respond, mm-hmm. and particularly if board decisions create further chaos within the whole organization itself, it means the board needs to become more involved. The board needs to understand the internal operations of the organization to such an extent that when it approves management's actions and overall strategy, it gives the results that the board is expecting. And I think that whole relationship between management and the board is where we really need to do a lot of work, and where boards need to recognize the importance of ensuring that they have a good quality, competent management team. That makes the difference to my mind about the extent of the board and micromanagement. But just to say one more thing before I give other persons an opportunity, we are in a crisis. No matter which sector we are in, you are impacted in a fundamental way, some persons for the better, because COVID has given them some advantages and opportunities, others for worse. But when you're in crisis, the board cannot carry on as usual. The board needs to be even more informed and involved to ensure that it's being managed to the betterment of the organization itself. That's my view.
Okay, thank you. Suraj, you had your hands up?
Yes, thank you very much for acknowledging me. Permit me to, Mr. Romano, to disagree with you, if you will, in terms of management going away in the uncertainty that we face. If we don't know the way, then is the blind leading the blind? Mm-hmm. And we have to understand that what is required to take us forward in today's world is leadership. And each of us in our environment would have a context. And whilst globally there are lots of uncertainties which would impact our organizations, we still need to understand our environment well. and be able to successfully predict. At no point in time in our history has everything been a constant, whereby we were able to predict everything that's going to happen. So we are going to be blindsided from time to time, mm-hmm. things. But that does not give us an excuse for saying that we don't know the way. In your environment and in your context, with your experience, you are supposed to be able, if you are worth your salt, you are supposed to be able in a context like this, where we need leadership, to be able to provide some definite way forward. And I think that this is where real leaders will be challenged. And when it comes to management, and there's a difference between leadership and management, which you know, it's maybe for a different forum. But the point is this, there is unpredictability, there is a lot of uncertainty, but we still have to have a way and a plan to take us out of this, because not knowing the way cannot be an excuse to take us out of this mire that we found ourselves in. So organizationally, we need a team. And this is another significant factor in my mind that is important for us, where the organization, board and management need to understand its roles and functions and work cohesively, even trade unions today, because they are themselves might be finding themselves in a position of, becoming irrelevant if they continue with their same attitude towards employers, right? Where there's the need for a team where everybody comes together to understand the importance of organizational survival in today's world. And that's why knowing the way is so important. Thank you.
So let me just ask a question. Is the way the path that we are going to follow, or is the way we approach finding the path? Just leave that. You don't have to answer.
It might be a combination of the two.
Exactly. Because let me tell you, going forward right now, very few people know the way, because the path is shifting as we speak. And therefore, for me, the way is about how we pull the team together, how you lead the conversation, how you guide without necessarily making decisions for the team, but working together to get to adjust, to shift as needs be. But Indu has a hand up. Indu.
Yes. Thank you, Nigel, and hello, everyone. I just wanted to underscore the point that Nigel is making a little bit, and perhaps take the conversation away from leadership, more around governance, and how do you deal with crisis in the context of a governance framework. And I think you're pointing to it, Nigel, around the fact that, you know, you have to continuously assess, you have to know where you are to start with, mm-hmm. and you have to continuously assess and make adjustments as you go along. And the from a pragmatic point of view, an organization needs to have the tools to be able to do that. And one of the most useful tools that you can have is a risk matrix, which assesses risk as you go along. And I'm sure many organizations would have had their business continuity plan and would have activated their business continuity plans and continuously assess as things change. We have developments happening every day. You will also have the role of your crisis management team to operationalize and to assess on a daily basis the operations. But those are effectively management teams. But from a board perspective, what the board wants to be informed of is any emerging risks and threats, and how are those mitigations being dealt with by management, and have a bird's eye view of those mitigations and advise along those lines, and really foresight down the road how the strategy of the organization has to change. But it has to be a risk-based approach, mm-hmm. Based on external threats to the organization, how the strategy is going to adapt and adjust, and also what are the mitigations that need to be put in place and continued as things go forward.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'm just going to read two comments. One by Janelle, and I see everybody has it, but I'm going to read it. And she refers to public health institutions, where the union is very involved. Challenges may arise, in particular, government-imposed measures, social distancing, et cetera. Employees may engage the unions to ensure hospitals that adhere to these measures. In some instances, space in public hospitals is a challenge. How does the board deal with such? So I'm not going to answer the question. I'm just going to read what Maria said. And good to see you here, Maria. The board needs to assess the risk appetite of the company, which is what Indu is saying, the capabilities and the competencies of the leadership team, and whether they are up to the new normal, as it were. Rich discussion. I'll shut up and anybody else can jump in. I like this conversation. Don't be shy.
Well, maybe I could just start it again, Nigel.
Yeah,
I mean, they, you know, it really, I think Kamla hit it in the context that, you know, it's different strokes to different boards, mm-hmm. right? Different quality of management. So that my intent of putting the word micromanaging there stimulated our conversation. I think it's important mm-hmm. that we understand what the point I was trying to make is that I think there are several, many directors who feel that they're very conscious of the role as a director to sort of to use the word, the verb direct and not mm-hmm. be involved, mm-hmm. right? The truth is, in my experience, I think this is purely anecdotal, but gut feel, that some directors, as I think in the last thing, say, well, they take on a board membership, you know, for the status, for the lunch. And some of them don't really want to get too involved. And all the point I'm just making here is that COVID is forcing them. You can't duck this one, right? If you're ducking this one, you're really not being you're not carrying out your fiduciary responsibility. And I agree with you anyway. I mean, nobody knows the way. I mean, while Suruj talks about leadership and you have to be clear, sure, we have to be clear. But I would propose that this thing has so, as I said in my notes, the heart is hard. There's so many unknowns. You know something? I think that, you know, a jumping, but, you know, even in a public institution, I think we're going to even have challenges as we bring the staff mm-hmm. back in, what they're going to expect from a physical layout point of view, how are we going to operate? In fact, I will share with you, I mean, the one that I'm, the small one I'm responsible with, we were able to work from home easily, and I'm now working out of my head. In fact, can this business substantially operate from home? I will save on real estate. I will save on, this is the Chinese, the coffee and the tea. but they will also be more productive because mm-hmm. they wouldn't have to spend 3 hours commuting. Gives them more flexibility, but managing that situation will be different, mm-hmm. right? So all I'm saying here, guys, is that we really don't know the way. You know. This thing is so, I agree with you, Nigel. I mean, yeah, you can kind of project what is going to be a price of your feed and, mm-hmm. and the potential thing. I mean, those kind of things are standard, mm-hmm. but anything could hit you, right? I mean, it is so, you know, I didn't read this article, but I see Terry there, as Terry says, you know, it's a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. This is a real, real perfect storm. I mean, we're having a double whammy. So whilst we are, as leaders, we have to be clear, we have to vision a path, but it is not going to be easy. And that's the only point I wanted to make, that we have a major challenge. And all I say to board members is that you have a role to play. Do not kind of hide and say, well, you know, I'm not to get involved. I didn't pick that up. And obviously, I talked about, you know, and I talk about maybe the COVID response, which falls under the risk committee in Indu. But of course, management has to do their whole risk assessment and the matrix. So, you know, I think we all aligned on it. But the question is, are we prepared to manage that change to get this thing going? It's easy to say we need to do this, I mean, just take technology, for example. It's a no-brainer, right? But there are going to be people who are going to try to not facilitate it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of things we have to be strong on. We have to really move forward. This is a golden opportunity for businesses, for the country, for people, everything.
No, it is. And to your point, the whole way we operate, and for me, this is where the board may have, in fact, I think the board has a responsibility to begin the conversation. How do we respond to the perfect storm? I mean, this is time for strategic thinking. This is time for not wasting the opportunity the crisis has given us to look at how we operate, to look at how we communicate with our customers, with our suppliers, with our team members, and to really take a deep dive into who we are and who we serve, and how do we use the opportunity to become a lot more efficient and a lot more effective at what we do without necessarily coming up with the answer. You know, we have to look at I mean, Porter is in my head right now and his five forces analysis. This is a time to look at all aspects of the operation. We haven't heard from Terry. Is he still with us? It would be good to hear from him.
Yes, he is. But we have a couple of contributions in the chat that you could probably read out first in the interim.
Well, the one is from Ivan Hinkson, I believe. Contribution to the one to being innovative, creativity and disruptive thinking decisions that have to be made. He says change is temporary. I suppose the specific change he's talking about and the current transformation-driven environment is persistent. And the challenge may be identifying available options to address ongoing transformation 2020 and beyond. And then Joanne, hi, Knight. Building on the points made by yourself, I would suggest that board uses this opportunity to go back to basics, such as revisiting board processes. How well is the board informed about the issues that are unfolding? How robust are the pre-COVID strategy and operational plans in light of current circumstances? 18 months at the very longest and the median planning time horizon may be pre-vaccine, post-vaccine, pre-vaccine being 12 months. What really is important for surviving the pre-vaccine time period to be able to consider our options post-vaccine? And then Anthony says, how do we anticipate and prepare for the next perfect storm? That is the challenge.
Yes, so. And I really like that question because the thing is, everyone is talking about the fact that there can be a second wave of COVID. And with a second wave, I think we would see people responding differently and managing that response, you know, in itself going to be challenging for boards. Because there may be persons who may initially have responded positively and stayed inside because they were concerned about what COVID really means and how many people, you know, may be affected and may die. But then because people are seeing it's really a 1% who gets hit really hard, you know, when you get infected, would people be as willing to really obey the regulations and the restrictions? And if they don't, what is the implications of that for your organization? So unless Mr. Watkins had any other example in his mind in terms of when he thinks through what may be the next perfect storm, that would be interesting to hear.
So actually, you know, I was just thinking, you know, there are some things that we have to do around the robustness of our organization and some of our systems. But so is how do we withstand some of the things that we anticipate? But part of the planning also has to be how do we recover from some of the blows that we're not going to be able to take, and whether those are systemic things, whether they are broader cultural issues. I mean, for me, one of the things that that this situation has done, and really is a board and management conversation. Mm-hmm. Not so much what are we going to do post-COVID, but what are we going to be as an organization,
mm-hmm.
which really strikes at a much more a deeper philosophical, almost an existential kind of question.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes back to the fundamental, really. What are we? And who do we serve, and what value do we provide to our clientele? And for me, once you get that, then looking at how you deliver that value is going to be critical. But back to the risk, the perfect storm. What kinds of insurance, if you will, do we have in place once the storm has passed, to ensure, one, that we survive the storm, and two, that we can take advantage of whatever opportunities arise after the storm. And that goes back to what kind of buffers you have, what kind of supplies you have put away, so that you can rely on that. And the brutal fact is that most businesses have no rainy day supplies. And as they say, as Warren Buffett says, it's when the tide goes out, you see who has been swimming naked. Unfortunately, a lot of people have been swimming naked.
Nigel, I just wanted to add, Tony, to your point, though. I mean, earlier clock, I had talked about, I didn't call them the 3 R's.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I said that the role of the board would have to be, you know, after they've assessed the situation, they may have to restructure. Mm-hmm. They may have to re-engineer. And when I say, I use long-time terms, mm-hmm. my terms of reference, but re-engineering could mean, you know, the adoption of greater technology. And then mm-hmm. I also talked about renew. Again, a little spiritual like you, Tony, you know, in the context of how do you renew the business? And I was trying to make the point then that perhaps the renewal means doing some, you know, cutting away, tied in with the restructure, but it is an opportunity. And we could come back. I mean, you know, I guess today's words, you might use it to be disruptive, to be innovative. I mean, it's all the same, right? In terms of really, I just come back, you know, the responsibility of a director is that they have to take this thing on. Mm-hmm. They cannot duck it if they want to remain a director, if they want to be a responsible director. And as you, I agree, Nigel, none of us know the answer
mm-hmm.
at this stage, but we have to provide to the leadership and at least to you know, kind of create a part.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm saying is that, I mean, this is real now. This business as unusual. We used to use it to mobilize the forces and to get everybody all motivated to rise a candy. But this thing is forcing us to be unusual, right? And this is, I see this really as the opportunity. This is time for renewal. And as board members, we have to make that, we must drive that to some extent. Not micromanage, I agree. Mm-hmm. But we must drive it. We have that responsibility.
And I agree that the board needs to become more involved in the conversations on a more regular basis, because coming up with adjustments and changes and new strategies are critical. I want to quote from Suraj again. He says, success depends on, of course, finding a way forward. He says organizations will prosper. I suppose what he means is some organizations will prosper in this crisis. And of course, change causes anxiety and worry, and hopefully that is a catalyst for change, for trying new things. But I mean, it's an uncertain world, and together, it's not about I having all the answers and directing you, so much as I having the ability to bring you together and guide the conversation, as opposed to dictating the answers. That's for me is the critical difference.
Let me just pop in. Terry, jump.
Let me hear from Terry, and then you can hear from you, Anthony. Okay. Terry. No,
well, Chairman, I just wanted to make a couple of points. One is, I think that we, you know, in the middle of difficult situations or crises, as we may call them, and so on, I think we have, as human beings, perhaps a tendency to exaggerate the moment. And I want to insert into discussion a perhaps countervailing perspective. And the countervailing perspective is that everybody keeps talking about this thing is going to cause dramatic change and transform all kinds of things and so on about society and so on. Let me posit that post-COVID, that we are going by and large to go right back to the way that we used to do things. That there is a certain, to use a physics kind of terminology, is a gravitational force that operates in societies in terms of how people operate and interact. And that means boards, it means communities, it means how the society operates, that you build up over a long period of time. And that it is not going to be just one event like COVID event that is going to change that and turn it upside down. I don't see that happening. What I see is that we are going to get a vaccine, because I am optimistic about human creativity and ingenuity and science. We will get a vaccine. In fact, we may get more than one vaccine. And that by the middle of 2021, the world is going to be seeing itself get back to a situation of what one might call normality. Now, there will be some changes in certain areas, right? Including, and in particular, we are going to see some geopolitical issues that are going to emerge. Mm-hmm. The second point that I would want to make is that one of the points that you were perhaps suggesting is that nobody can see the way and so on. But the role of the board in these circumstances is to narrow down the possibilities. Yeah. And here is where scenario planning, which we all of us were taught when we were doing our MBAs and so on, this is where it comes in. And that what your board should be doing is that instead of trying to say, well, look, anything could happen and anything is possible, narrow down the possibilities and create scenarios, two or three scenarios about what this world is like over the course of the next 12 months and over the course of the next 2 years. And then you act on the basis of the scenario that you think is going to be most likely. Mm-hmm. What that does is that it reduces the uncertainty, because when we have a situation of uncertainty, it can be paralyzing. People don't know what to do. They don't know how to act. So to reduce the uncertainty, we create scenarios, we decide on a scenario, and we move forward. So let me just give an example in the context of, I mean, I know Richard was on the board of a bank, and in the case of the banks, for example, the scenarios that are ahead of the banks are clear. They're relatively clear, let me put it that way. They're relatively clear. We know that in the circumstances of a recession, that non-performing loans are going to increase. We know that we have to respond on the basis of IFRS 9, expected credit losses, which is a new standard which is going to impose higher provisioning in respect of those things. And therefore, you act on that basis. You don't know, you don't see the wait for the losses to come through and then react as what we would have done 30 years ago. But now you can, in fact, create a scenario, which is what the bank of which I'm a board member, is what we have done. And what we have acted on in respect of making provisions, which have been reflected in the first quarter accounts for Republic Financial. So you create scenarios, and every business can do that. The insurance companies, of which I am a director, have done precisely that, because you can figure out in the circumstances, look, this is what is likely to happen in respect of my insurance premium revenues, in respect of my investment income and losses. Whether the loss is going to be 20% or 50%, I may not know, but I establish a number and I work with that in terms of my scenario. So What we have to do as boards is that we have to create scenarios, and we have to pick the scenario that we think is most likely, and then get our management to act on it. And my final point is this, that when I talked about the perfect storm in the context of Trinidad and Tobago, I was saying that our perfect storm is that we have two big things to deal with, COVID-19 and the fact that oil and gas prices have dropped, and they have happened almost simultaneously. And that for us is a situation that we have to now grapple with, because COVID-19, we may be over that in a year's time, maybe a year and a half time, I would guess. But the situation in respect of the energy sector and the energy market is likely to be much more long lasting than that. And therefore we have some more rather serious questions, I think, to address in that context.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Spot on. Anthony, before we discuss it, you wanted to come in.
Well, actually, it might be more useful to discuss some of the things that Terry has placed on the table. I could, if we have time, I could make my point a little later.
Okay, no worries. The question I have for you, Terry, is a lot of what you're saying is almost status quo. So the impact for me, the insurance companies and the banks, they have been here before and will be here after. The question I would have is, what else is coming down the track that could disrupt the, in one of the things I've been thinking about, the credit card business of banks. I've been looking at a little company called Tally in the United States that is on the move, and basically almost automatically taking the outstanding credits from the banks without them even knowing it. What other factors are coming down the track? And how, forget the banks and the insurance companies and the bigger organizations. What about the smaller SME type businesses, and how I mean, restaurants, real estate, tourism, that kind of stuff.
Well, what is going to happen with those things, Nigel, I would want to submit, is going to be no different from the last recession that we had here, 1980s, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and if I may give an analogy of a pilot flying aeroplanes, right? 99.9% of the time, we don't have any problem. The plane goes up, they fly, they land, they come down. But pilots and airlines predict scenarios that could happen in flight, and they train their pilots to deal with them. And they go into the simulators, and they prepare for those things. An engine fails, two engines fail, right? My pitot tubes are clogged up. What do I do? How do I get out of the situation? And that's what good boards, quite frankly, are supposed to be doing all the time. So that, for example, our banks, the fintech challenge for banks is not new, and it is not going to go away as a result of COVID-19. In fact, it has been accelerated as a result of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So what you may have been estimating, well, look, boy, this thing, it might take 5 years before it hits me here in Trinidad. It might not be two or three. And so therefore, that's how you respond, I think, to the situation. But I think that there's very little, quite frankly, that I could see in the context of this crisis that a good board would not have been mulling and dealing with and so on before. If I'm a restaurant, you would, one of the things that you would now say to yourself is, look, you know, curbside pickup. That is something that I may now decide as a restaurant is an avenue that I want to have for my business, even though I may still have in-room dining after COVID, but I may still have curbside pickup because it has turned out to be a wonderful business, you know? So I think that good boards that have been thinking about strategy, have been using scenario planning and so on over the last, which is what they're supposed to do, should not be totally unfazed. Our job is like the captain of the plane in a crisis, is to be calm. You look for precedent, and there has been precedent. People like Richard and myself, who are around in the 1980s, who yourself too, Nigel, because you're not that young, right? who would have
I'm more here than you, Nigel.
Who would have seen some kinds of challenges in the 1980s and would now know what to do. And I would tell you that the experience of the 1980s in Trinidad, and Richard hopefully can confirm this in the context of the boards that he is on, has been very helpful to directors today, because we could look back at that experience and we could say, hey, this is what happened. This is what we did wrong. Here, let's not make sure we don't make that mistake here again.
Yep, yep. No, you're absolutely right.
Let me just put a little fun into it, but at the same time, a serious thought though. Terry, you know, I share very openly with the folks here. So about 2 years ago, maybe sitting on the Massey board, we kept pushing the Massey stores guys to do curbside for delivery, right? Because I think Al Young had introduced something called something box, hot box or hot box or something. And the feeling was that would the people change and want the groceries delivered or pass through the store and pick it up? And of course, at the time, the feeling was that it wouldn't happen. They didn't want it. Or because you're going to deliver for someone, they're not home, you know, trains, you get caught in a traffic jam, the ice cream melts, and stuff like that. And funny, COVID has now brought this thing a reality. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, we talk about it. Would this continue after COVID? Would we fall back into the habit? So what I the point I'm just making is that, you know, just like in the 80s, let's use COVID as an opportunity to really move the business forward. And if you could do it for the country, so much better. You know, and that to me is the responsibility of the board. Not that we weren't doing it before, but, you know, there are more circumstances now that might facilitate the change. You know, I mean, there's lots of people who, in spite of the risk, were happy to go to work because most of them, you know, live from paycheck to paycheck. And this opportunity, because they are now in an essential service, they didn't have the risk of losing their job. And they were happy. They were, in fact, willing to get, you know, if they had to work extra overtime. So, you know, it has brought a different perspective. And to your point, when this vaccine comes along, or we don't want to start to wear the mask again, and maybe second wave may not come, you know, are we going to go back to a bad habit? And that is the point I'm making again as a board. We have to ensure that if the opportunity presents itself, if we can disrupt the business, if we can apply innovative mechanism, use COVID as the opportunity to position it. Yeah. You know, so I think we all kind of saying, you know, on the same kind of wavelength, but it's amazing.
No, I agree, and I want to thank Terry for that, the scenario planning thing, looking forward. What could be coming down the track, and how do we narrow the possibilities, and therefore how do we respond? How do we prepare? Critical. And that for me is where the board really adds value.
Right. And to add to that, I mean, Indu talked about, you know, doing the risk analysis, the risk assessment. I kind of hinted that maybe there should be a special COVID committee, or like most things, do they abdicate it to the Oils and Risk Committee? I think that you know, again, as for board, we're just talking from a perspective of board members. There might be some merit, not that we want to create work, but there might be some merit to have a kind of a COVID subcommittee, you know, because they are taking the opportunity, assessing the situation, and you know, perhaps coming up with strategies or re-engineering it, as the case, using more technology. You know, it's just, again, you're right. I mean, any serious board would have been doing this regardless of COVID or not. It's just COVID has just brought an impetus and more, there's a greater push to do it.
Yeah.
Because Terry, I am sure you agree that we really up the creek. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound doom and gloom, but you know, when the economy finally reopens, I shudder. I mean, I really shudder, because you know, whether people had their reserves, people don't want to go back to the reserves. The business might fail, and then the whole union and the labor, you know, they should be part of the conversation.
Definitely.
No, not, It's difficult. That's my point on Chairman, on State Republic Financial has set up a COVID, I don't call it a subcommittee, but we've created, because you're looking at all of the businesses across the region and in terms, because different countries have different regulations, different times of opening, how opening up and so on. And this is now being monitored by this subcommittee of the Board of Republic that is meeting every 2 weeks and is consulting this dashboard that they've created in terms of the measures and so on that have been taken, and monitoring this on a fortnightly basis. So that goes to Richard's point that, you know, this is how the board would respond in a situation like this.
Yeah, really. Any other comment? Yeah. Anthony? Tony?
Yeah, let me just come back in a couple of things and some useful discussions around Terry's points there. You know, as directors, so we have this responsible legal fiduciary responsibility to the organization or the board on which we sit. Many organizations are going to be threatened in terms of their individual survival. Are we as organizations fighting for a bigger slice of a shrinking pie? Or is there a perspective that stepping out of our narrow responsibility to the organization on whose board I sit, are there sectoral or subsectoral initiatives that boards may actually have to begin to collaborate with competing, what were previously competing organizations, so that the subsector or the sector grows and the broader economy grows? And to what extent, how do directors, in a sense, grapple with what was my narrow responsibility to this organization and its interest in terms of working with people who may have been competing with us, but is changing that? And Suruj had some points about the flexibility. Is that flexibility required and appropriate for the survival of the organization on whose board I sit? Because many organizations are not going to survive alone.
Yep. No, I agree. That's a very good question.
Yeah. What, collaboration, right?
What does collaboration look like? And is there a path forward that says by working together, we increase the probability that we both survive? So, question.
Well, again, here, Chairman, let me say, you know, it's in respect of the banks, let us say, right? One of the things that we have seen throughout the world, unfortunately, we haven't seen it here from the Central Bank of Trinidad and Tobago, which has me a little bit worried. But one of the things is that you want to get guidance from regulators in a situation like this, because if you are going to have a greater number of insolvencies, for example, right? We have insolvency legislation. There are rules which govern insolvencies. I have noted that in countries like Canada and Australia, the authorities have deliberately relaxed those rules in these circumstances, so that a bank, for example, wouldn't put you into insolvency using the same rules, because the situation is unique, the situation is different. We haven't done that here yet, and I am hoping that there is still time for something like that to be done. There is, obviously, the banks, let me just say here in Trinidad, have together addressed the whole question of the non-performing loans and have worked with the Central Bank of Trinidad and Tobago in terms of how that is supposed to be treated as far as their capital is concerned and how they do their provisioning, et cetera, et cetera. The insurance companies would have to do the same thing. So that industry collaboration, which is what I think Tony was getting at, is something which is critically important, where if industry gets together and decides, look, for the interests of the whole, these are the things that the authorities could do. It might require legislation, change to legislation and so on, that they should go forward and make those suggestions and approaches to the government, because it might naturally occur to the public servants that these things could happen or that these things need to be done.
Very, 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 very important. Richard, you wanted to say something?
I was going to say, I was told a few weeks ago actually, that a person is going to be presented, prepared for discussion along the same lines, Terry, in the context that let's move away from the 90 days and let's go to whatever it is and cascade it all the way, whether it's capital requirements, so the loans are not no longer loans performing, you know, and the whole question of collectability. It is going to be interesting. I mean, but then, of course, the question is going to ask, what are you going to tell the depositors? Are you going to suggest to them they're only getting 1% that they know as part of the whole? Or, as one trade unionist kind of hinted, let the banks give up 25% of their profit. You know, we need to have that collective thought. But I was thinking that there must be, and I haven't done the research, whether internationally, whether it's the Bank of England or the Canadian Central Bank or the U.S. Federal, whether they have in fact revisited all that. Because it's affecting not just Atlanta, right? The entire world.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Richard, I have, you know, so that in our mm-hmm. case, as far as I'm informed, the you know, we were supposed to be implementing Basel II. The central bank was supposed to happen this year. The central bank has now indicated to the commercial banks that it is going to defer that. So we are basically operating with the old Basel I capital adequacy. And that's important. Mm-hmm. In the case of the UK and those other countries, they were going to Basel III. Mm-hmm. They have decided that they are going to defer Basel III. And they are going to Basel III. So those are the kinds of things that I'm talking about, where with the regulator and with the industry, you agree in the context of the circumstances, look, you need to have some accommodation.
No, clearly.
I mean, there needs to be collaboration at all levels. I mean, you know, missing in this conversation really is the labor side. I think we need to somehow get a couple, you know, the unionists in on the conversation.
Well, we had them a few weeks ago. Yeah. Eh? I think we need to bring them back.
But that was more from the HRIR.
No, I know. Yeah, but really, from, and again, partnership there is also very important. But of course, we have to deal with the low levels of trust. But that's a different conversation. Kamla, we are at 12:28.
Yes.
I think we have had a very, very good discussion, and I'm always respectful of time. So do you want to wrap it up for us?
Yes, I can. And I want to agree and thank everyone for what I think has been a tremendous session today. Very enlightening for all of us. And I think if persons are willing, you know, we can be flexible, because I did have another session scheduled for next week, but it was not a continuation of this topic. However, I think given what a lot of today's conversations has raised, there's merit in us taking it forward. So if some of you will agree, we can try to get some of the trade union leaders to also join us. And let us look at what collaboration would look like moving forward, so that together we could try to help inform the conversation. And as Dr. Farrell says, you know, make recommendations as well that would help with the regulators being able to understand what stakeholders really need and how we can together move forward. So if you guys are willing, I'll be reaching out to you at the end of this session to say, you know, let's continue the conversation next week. And
not that I'm volunteering, so please don't misunderstand my enthusiasm. But, you know, maybe to the point, we should target a particular sector, one that is fledging right now, and use that sector to get the conversation, whether it's the hospitality or the hotel and talk to that, because it's ideal. I mean, they're really chasing it. They don't know whether what's going to happen, whether eating habits are going to change. I suspect they'll be back to where it is. But the point is, you know, it'd be good. Industry collaboration, you know, just a thought.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's an excellent idea.
Yes. I think so. Okay. So
I want to also to thank the participants, Suraj, Terry, but of course Richard for a great presentation. Tony for great insights. The consultant, he's on a Del Vostro. But I think we had a very good discussion, and I really would like to have the directors and the trade unionists in a conversation about how do we collaborate, really collaborate in a very open and honest fashion to ensure that we not only survive, but we thrive going forward. So.
Yeah. So I will try to make that happen for next week. All right.
Thank you all very much.
Yes. Thank you guys. Have a wonderful day. And you'll hear from us again soon.
Take care. Nigel.
Yes.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Christy, thanks a lot for the help. Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye.